Blog Talk Radio.
It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. It's been too hard living, but I'm afraid to die. I don't know what's up there beyond the sky. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes it will. I go to the movie and I go downtown. Somebody keep telling me don't hang around. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes it will. Then I go to my brother. Say, brother, help me please. But he winds up knocking me back down on my knees. Lord, there have been times that I thought I could last for long. But I know a change gon' come. Oh, yes it will.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another Friday night's edition of Let's Talk Fort Worth. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. Thank you for joining us for what should be another great show. A reminder, we do not own the rights to the music you just heard. Also, please click tag and share. Tell someone Let's Talk Fort Worth is on the air. And tonight, we'll be speaking with local activist and founder of Just Cause, Reggie Ruffin. Reggie alleges there is an auto theft ring operating inside the Dallas Police Department, and he is a victim. On July 4, 2019, Reggie says Officer Kashanda Copeland, badge number 8739, falsified two police reports that stated his 1988 Mercury Cougar and his 2005 Suzuki Firenza were illegally parked and abandoned. This despite the cars being parked on the street Ruffin lives. Ruffin further states the vehicles were being driven on a regular basis. So tonight, we want to hear his story. But before we begin, a disclaimer, the views and opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect that of Let's Talk Fort Worth, the host, or our advertisers. With that said, Let's Talk Fort Worth. And we are waiting for Mr. Ruffin. We've spoken today. And Mr. Ruffin was told what time he was supposed to be on the air. I am going to try to reach him via phone and see where is the disconnect this evening. So if you all would give me a second, I will try to reach him via phone. And we're dialing his number now.
Hello.
Mr. Ruffin, this is Carrie Hyde, the Left
Talk Network. Yes. I dropped all my documents. I was trying to carry everything.
Okay,
Mr.
Ruffin has told me his story, and I have found it absolutely fascinating. I have reached out to the city of Dallas this week. Spoke with people. I'm hearing somewhat of an echo. I reached out to the city this week of Dallas. I spoke with the IED department, the South Central Precinct, and the Dallas Auto Pound about Mr. Ruffin's story. In the mayor's office, I spoke with Tristan. In the IED department, I spoke with James Etchinson. And the Dallas Auto Pound, I spoke with both Sergeant Summers and Lieutenant Dinninger. Everyone pretty much denied any knowledge of knowing the story. However, Lieutenant Dinninger and Sergeant Summers did acknowledge that they did have a record that the 2005 Suzuki Firenza was impounded at the lot on July 4th, 2019, and was sold on August 12th. So there is some record of one of the cars. However, there are some questions about the other. Are you ready, Mr. Ruffin?
Oh, yes, I'm definitely ready.
Okay, great. Okay, so let's begin with, there appears to have been some type of situation going on between a neighbor and yourself. So do you believe that was the starting point, the situation between you and your neighbor and that situation escalating?
The situation with the neighbor, it was weird. I mean, we've known each other almost going on almost 20 years. Never had problems with them before. Now the elder, you know, the father of the family, he passed away back in 2017. But you know, but like I said, any other time we had any little problems, I mean, they were very minor. But for some ungodly reason, when my dad parked his pickup truck in front of their house, the guy had a hissy fit about it. And, you know, I mean, like, I work graveyard shifts. So, you know, imagine it's like 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm being awakened by a heated argument. And I'm going like, you know, what the heck is going on in this? And so I go out there to see what's going on. And I see the next door neighbor. I didn't even know his name was Clyde. I always known him as JT, but I go out there, we find out about his name is Clyde Chapman, and you know, he's up here, he's in my dad's face. And so, you know, I got over there and got between them and said, look, man, that's a 79-year-old man. You're not gonna be, you know, he's talking about he's gonna crack him upside his head and everything. I said, no, you're not gonna do that one. I said, but I'd be more than happy to oblige you on anything else. And so I called the police to report, you know, to report what had happened, because my dad had went back in the house and got his gun, needless to say, because he had to go back out there and move his truck. And but I told him, I said, you know, I mean, whatever you got to do, you got to move whatever you got to move. I said, I'll move the truck. You know, I'm not worried about him doing nothing. And we, you know, so the cops came. We reported the incident. And the officer that took the report was Tracy Taylor. And he took the report, and we So everything, seemed to be okay. That officer explained to him that if he's not blocking your driveway or he's not up on your curb, you can't stop somebody from parking a car in front of the house. But, they've had family members come by for, family dinner, stuff like that. They parked in front of our house, stuff like that. But we've never had to trip about nothing like that. And my dad normally parks his pickup truck, under his garage. He has an awning and everything, a canopy. He would just park there for, it wasn't even going to be about an hour. He was just cutting grass. And, this is still during the time he was still doing construction on the streets. So he had to make a few little adjustments, as far as where to park and everything. They had started a construction project on our streets like that spring, like May. And, in May and June and, you had to move your cars here and there, this and that, but like I said, with me, I work graveyard shifts, so my car be parked there all day. While I had to park it there, I'll park it across the street at my neighbor's at 2667 Exeter, because our house is right at the corner of Sunnyvale and Exeter, and you can park, we parked there, and, everything seemed to be okay, but nobody was making a big deal. About a week or two after that, I think the first incident was like May the 19th, and I think the second incident came about a little like a week after that. Same situation. Another officer had to come. I think his name was Mark Gonzalez. And Gonzalez, he intervened in the situation and, said the same thing. So he told us at that point, if this happens anymore, to call his cell number. So we got his information. He didn't do a standard report or anything. He just, since there was already a report filed, he just said, that's how we was gonna handle it. So June the 4th. Turned out to be a real interesting one. I come back from work. I'm in the bed sleeping. It's about 8 o'clock, something like that. And DPD comes by the house, and it's like a supervisor comes by. She puts a sticker on the car. So my dad, out there again. So my dad was like, why are you all still bothering what's the problem with Reggie's car now? They said they was getting complaints about the car just sitting there. The car was doing this and that. It was just taking up space or whatever. I said, he's the one to talk to. I didn't even get a chance to talk to Officer Copeland. So he said that he would come in there and wake me up and let me talk to her. Because, I've only had maybe like one or two other problems about my car. Because my car is an 88 Mercury Cougar. It's an antique. And I have antique license plates on it. I bought this car in 2002. The car's been, it's been a part of the neighborhood, part of the house, part of the community all these years. No one's never really said nothing about it. All of a sudden now, it started to become a problem. So I go, when I come outside, she's already gone. So now I'm feel like I'm being harassed. So at that point, that's when I had got my girlfriend at the time. Her name was Lisa. I said, look, let's take a video of this, because I figured that the only person that could have did this was, the nutbag next door. So he must be calling the police now and try to get them involved. So I did a demonstration to show once and for all that the car works. Because I think like maybe a couple years ago, code enforcement came by once before, checked on the car. They thought the same thing, that the car didn't work because, the paint job looks bad. But, it's got a Mustang 302 racing engine up under there. Car had a rebuilt motor when I first bought it in 2002, and I redid the transmission. So car was always in great mint condition. That car has only broken down on me maybe three times, you know, in 17 years. So I never had any problems with the car. That's why I kept it. You know, people always used to ask me, oh, well, why you still have an old car? When I crank it up, that answer all crazy. Oh, I get it now. So we do a demonstration. I drive the car, show it on the video, and I come back. The officer also told my dad that I can't park on the same spot in front of the house. I need to, like, move it up a few feet here, move it up a few, or back it up a few feet back, because it seems like it's always at the same spot. I said, okay, it's at the same spot, because, I mean, that's where I'm used to parking it. But I said, just for the hell of it, I'll just park in front of their house again. Because, see, they didn't have no cars over there in front, so I parked in front of their house. So he came outside like he wanted to fight. So, hey, so we got there, we about to fight and everything, and then, which it gave me an extra added advantage that now I can show the city, the police, and everybody like this just how often this guy and how crunk this guy is about this. So I called the police again, filed a report, but nothing was done.
So what month
and,
was this?
This was June the 4th, 2019.
Okay.
So yeah,
so
it was the third. This before the cars got impounded.
Okay,
so
a month before.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that video that I gave you, that I gave you, it has the date stamped on there, 6/4/19.
Mm-hmm.
So I had everything seemed to have been okay. Everything seemed to have gotten quiet. There was no more problems. And then 4th of July, I'm in the house sleep, and I have a neighbor that's across, my neighbor across the street at 2667 Exeter. You know, he's a mechanic. Now the Forenza, I bought that car for my mother, and I had to get some work done on the motor. And the mechanic who did the work, he guaranteed the motor for a year. The motor started having problems and complications, like he put a new motor in there, but he didn't change the hoses. The hoses ruptured, and then the head gasket went bad on the car, so I had to get it taken back. They had to work on it again. Then about a few weeks after that, it engine started acting up again a second time. So I just went on and parked the car at the house and left it at the house at that time. And then I started back driving the Cougar. Because like I said, all I had to do with the Cougar was push it out from under the under garage and tapped it a few times. It cranked right on up. So I said, until I get this problem squared away with the Suzuki, I was going to drive the Cougar. So, we're here. We are. It's the 4th of July, and we're in the house. You know, it's just, you know, we're just doing it like right before. Next thing I know, I get a phone call saying that the police came out there and impounded the cars. I started to go out there to confront the situation, but I felt like that wasn't a good idea because I think I was being set up. Because I feel like if I went out there, to confront the situation, and then the police would have been hollering about they had to shoot me in self-defense or something.
Mm-hmm.
So what I ended up doing was I went back and tried to see if I could make a phone call somewhere else and find out what was going on. But then by the time I did get out there, they were already gone. And so I went out there and the cars were gone. So the first thing I did was say, okay, I'll go down there and call I called 911, reported the cars were stolen. So they told me, well, no, the cars weren't stolen, that the cars were impounded. So so after I did that, then it just the next day I finally got down there to the precinct. Talked to the precinct commander there, and I reported what had happened, and I told him, what seemed to be the problem. I said, they kept telling me that, you know, Officer Copeland.
That's South Quinn. Central Precinct, right?
Right, South Central Precinct.
Okay.
Yeah, so I go to South Central Precinct, and they everything just, you know, we started talking about it. So they said at that point that I would have to just fill out a report, and I would have to talk about what had happened, and we was going to have to just do this whole thing, this whole dance. So I filed a report, and, of course, they called Officer Copeland, and, of course, she said, you know, that she came by and got the cars. She also claimed that she came by the day before on the 3rd and put stickers on the cars. And that's when I stopped him. I said, no, that's a lie, because if you had put stickers on the cars, we would have moved them. So that's all you had to do was move the cars. I mean, they put stickers on people's cars all the time. If you had to move it, that's all that would have had to happen. I just went out there. I mean, the Suzuki, I couldn't drive it a great distance, but I could move it back and forth. And this was during the time they just started resurfacing the road. So my thing was, I knew at the time that this was the whole scheme, that they were trying, when they got in that neighborhood, they were grabbing people's cars left and right. It wasn't just me, but it's like my car seemed like it was the final one that they could get, because, you know, they was like almost halfway done with construction when they finally got my car, because like that first couple of months, yeah, they were dragging out a lot of people's cars. But funny thing is, the house that, you know, my next door neighbor's house at 2707, they never touched those cars. I mean, they got like 8 or 9 cars in their driveway. Some of those cars haven't been driven since the Clinton administration, Bush administration, a couple of them might be Obama. But they have several cars there, and they never get touched, because I guess they said because they're on the property. But however, these things are becoming a nuisance, because they have all types of vermin, have all types of possums and stuff all in them. You know, it's a very squalid look. And, you know, the police knows all about it, but they never seem to bother their cars. But everybody else's cars, they come for them.
But those cars were parked on a property inside of a property line, and yours were parked on the street.
Right.
Okay.
Mine were on the street, but
okay.
And, you know, then they also said something about a 24-hour rule that you have to move your car every 24 hours if they're parked in front of the house on the city street. And I'm going like, who in the hell is going to enforce a 24-hour ordinance like that? Like, they have time to ride up and down the street and move people's cars. I mean, they have cars, you know, even on Exeter right now, some of those cars haven't been moved in God knows when, but it definitely ain't been no 24 hours. And you're talking about a city that has, they say they only have 3,000 cops. So you're telling me one of the things these cops have to do is ride up down the street patrolling parked cars. I think the other problem that we was having about that is the fact that code enforcement usually handled these problems. Since when did the police start handling these types of situations? Because code enforcement and parking enforcement usually handles this situation. So that's when I started getting to believe this had become personal. And I know with me being an activist, you know, I started Just Cause Coalition because of prior incidents with me where, you know, I had gotten wrongfully prosecuted behind the police, because the standard operation procedure is you arrest, you indict, and then you try to see if you can get this person to take a plea deal. And these were some of the things that I had been speaking out about for ever since 2011, after the second time I had gotten arrested and got prosecuted. And I've done stories about the fact that I had gotten wrongfully arrested and prosecuted. and I successfully won both of my cases because I would take a plea bargain. I took the thing to trial, and the case got first case got dismissed. The second case, I had to go to trial and got acquitted because the girlfriend I was with at the time tried to use a domestic violence case to try to get me to marry her and everything. And I said, no, that's not going to happen because if I can't trust you past what's going on now, I'm definitely not going to marry somebody. And you know, like I said, when I try to address these problems, I spoke to the city about it. You know, when you go down there and address your problems with the city, they stare at you like you're doing an audition for American Idol or something like that, and then 3 minutes is up, time for you to get off the stage. They, you know, they're very cold. They're very absent. They're very acrimonious. They have some very it's just very disrespectful the way they treat the citizens when we're trying to talk to them about some serious problems.
Okay, let me ask you that.
Yes.
Did you reach out to your city council person?
Right off the bat. And she didn't call. Carolyn King Arnold didn't even call me for almost 2 weeks. Finally, she had her her assistant, Ms. Griggs, call me. I answered the phone, and I told her, you know, she told me she was. She said, I'm calling. My name is Ms. Griggs. I'm with Carolyn King Arnold's office. We were just calling to find out, did you have insurance on the cars? I said, no, I didn't, because what you going to have insurance for when the cars are not even being driven? Because the Suzuki at the time wasn't being driven. And as far as the Cougar, you know, I had insurance on the car at the time when I was starting back driving it, but I didn't have it the whole entire time. And then the other thing about antique cars, a lot of insurance companies don't even want to cover antique cars because they feel that you just buy an insurance on it just to have a wreck with somebody, because people be doing a lot of insurance scams and everything. So I was going to have to try to find an insurance company that wasn't going to be so leery and so they wouldn't be so reluctant about covering a car like an 88 Mercury Cougar. But you know, getting insurance on the Suzuki, well, yeah, that was no problem. But
so in answer to her question, the answer was no, you did not have insurance on either car at the time.
Right, but the thing is, it didn't matter because the cars weren't being driven. If I was driving the car and I got pulled over and didn't have insurance, yes, they have a legal right to impound the car. But you can't impound the car if the car is parked. So that's the point I'm making in the questioning, because that's the way they was asking me, and I told them the same thing. What difference does it make if the cars were not being driven at the time? But you can't just be riding around and seeing if someone have insurance. If they don't have insurance, you impound the car. That's not how the law works.
So you're going back and forth with the city, and did you understand you only had 30 days to get this right, or they were going to sell the car? Was that ever stated to you?
They sent me a letter. They did send me a letter stating that they were going to do that. And at that point, that's when I went down to the district court and I filed a civil injunction to stop the sale of the cars. Mm-hmm. I went down there that Wednesday, and August the 7th, they were going to sell the cars on the 12th. I addressed the city about the situation. I told them that I had filed an injunction, and I told them that I wanted a you know, that they need to stop this harassment and everything, and they need to release the cars because there was no laws broken. Not to mention, I found out when I went down to get the police report that the officer lied on the police report. She claimed the cars were abandoned only because it was parked one house across the street out of construction zone. She said, well, that's sufficient enough to claim that they were abandoned. And that's the same thing that Moises Ochoa, who's supposed to be the one that was investigating it, claimed. And I'm like, you know, apparently they don't know about civil laws and everything like that, because a car is considered part of your castle doctrine. That is your personal property. Whether I parked it across the street, down the street, 2 miles away, if someone is harassing or mess with that car or they take it illegally, that's still auto theft, considering the fact that this officer filed a false report. Before any time a police officer confiscates a vehicle, it has to be specific reasons for doing so. First one is the car inoperable? First one. Second one, is it sitting on milk cartons or something? Is it blocking the street? You know, is it blocking the flow of traffic? None of these things were occurring. And then, of course, here's one that we hear all the time. We got complaints about the cars. Okay, where is your, they said a 311. Was it 311 or was it 911? They said, I'll go 311. So, of course, you go down there, you're going to file an open records request to get that information. They blocked me from getting that claim in that because of civil statutes, I was not entitled to get those things because I was the one that was, since I'm the complainant, that I can't get that information because that may endanger the people who made the call, which was, again, just another load of crap. What you about to say, Kerry?
No, so you're going back and forth with them, and the time is about to expire. So it's August 7th. You file the injunction. When was the paperwork supposed to reach the pound so that they would know not to sell the car?
It could have gotten to them the next day because it's not even a 10-minute. Even if you did it by foot, you could walk from the district court to the city hall, because they're right there in the same area. And then the police station is not even a mile from there, and the constables are taking paperwork back and forth just about every day. So you had all that day, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, and then, of course, even that Monday, they could have gotten it. Plus the fact that I went to city hall and addressed this issue and told them that I had filed the injunction. If my city councilwoman had enough gumption, she could have made the phone call and told them to stop the sale.
Did you understand that you were supposed to serve the pound, or were they supposed to serve the pound with the injunction paper?
They were supposed to serve the pound.
Okay.
I can't walk in there and serve them. That's what the clerk told me, that the constable would have to serve it. So I had to pay the filing fee and everything like that for them to serve the city about stopping the sale. But in any regard, they were well aware of it. However, here's another caveat. What are you about to say?
That was one of the things that Sergeant Summers said to me. Sergeant Summers helps to run the pound. I spoke with him today, and he said that you could have served him the papers. So that's not what you were saying. That's not what you were told by the court.
Right. That's not what I was told. No, not at all. I was not told that when I went down to the clerk's office. The clerk said that the only way it could be done, it had to be issued by a constable. And since I'm not a law enforcement, I could not go down there and take them myself. So it doesn't surprise that one person say one thing, another one says the other thing, but at the end of the day, they screwed me. And then the other thing that also could have happened is when they got the paper, let's say like they claim they didn't get it to the 13th. If they'd have got it on the 13th, they could have called whoever they sold the cars to and had them return the cars, and they would have had to void the sale and had to refund them their money back.
True.
If you wanted to be that oblivious to it, if you wanted to be that blatantly obtuse or tragically stupid, they could have done all of these things. But at the end of the day, when the court order was filed, the court order should have been honored, and the city refused to do so. They did not like the fact that this 12th grade, arrogant, bald, black, fat, a Negro is running around here trying to tell them what to do.
Wow.
So
Listen. That's
the problem.
Listen, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Let's Talk Fort Worth. I'm Kerry Hines, and we're talking to Reggie Ruffin, Reggie Ruffin is the founder of Just Cause and a local activist here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And Reggie alleges that there is an auto theft ring inside the Dallas Police Department, and in fact, he has been a victim. And he states that they took his 1988 Mercury Cougar and his 2005 Suzuki Firenza on July 4th, 2019, and sold them by August 12th, 2019. So tonight, he's telling us his story. So, Reggie, you're saying, and I agree with you on that part, that, you know, more than likely, the vehicle hadn't even been picked up by the 13th. So,
right.
Yeah, so more than likely, they probably could have, you know, stopped the sale, with, you know, giving the person their money back and giving you your vehicle. But the problem is they told me that they have record of the 2005 Suzuki Firenza, but they don't have record of the 1988 Mercury Cougar. However, you said at some point they told you just the opposite. Is that correct?
That is correct. That's in my court documents that I emailed you, because I had to have all those court documents and supporting documents to prove that it was both cars, because Ms. Copeland did not put the Cougar down in her initial police report. She only put down the VIN number and the tag number to the Suzuki. And then they try to play dumb as if they did not know that both cars were registered to me, because the license plate on the Cougar was antique tag with Mississippi plates. But, of course, the name on the car on that one was Jimmy Ruffin. My name is Reggie Ruffin. Previous owner of the car on that one is Reggie Ruffin. And so it doesn't take a rocket science to deduct two cars, last name Ruffin. Okay, we're at 2667 Exeter. Oh, if I look over across the street, that's 2703. Oh, I remember that house. I was just there a few weeks ago jazzing them up about these cars. So
okay, let's pause for a second. You're taking me too fast. Okay, so that said, when you say that both cars were not mentioned on the police report, can you elaborate on what was on the police report? Are you saying that both vehicles were not properly documented on the police report, or are you saying?
They were not properly. Right. That's what I meant by that. Because the only thing they put on, they put the VIN number on the Suzuki, and they put the license plate number on it, and they put abandoned on both spaces where you have to log in the car. You got to log in where you know, the make and model of the car and all that other stuff. She conveniently did not complete the entire paperwork when she filed it. However, when it got turned into the Auto Pound, they have all that information. So of course, when I called down there, yes, they had the information on both vehicles.
Okay.
And then the other thing that I found, what was about to say?
What date was that when they showed that they had both vehicles? Because both Lieutenant Denninger and Sergeant Summers, who I spoke with at the pound, stated that they did not ever show the 1988 Mercury Cougar, even though I gave them the last six digits of the VIN and the Mississippi license.
That was the week before that was the week before they sold the cars. When I got that certified notice that they had the cars on sale, plus they had the inventory of the cars that was on there. And but like I said, all of those in the supporting documents that I have that I have filed with the with the district court. The case number is DC-19-11133, Reggie Ruffin versus City of Dallas.
Okay. So
I mean, it's not that hard to pull up, and all those documents are attached to the petition. Both cars is in the petition. The VIN numbers, everything is on there. And of course, yes, Ms. Copeland did swear out a statement about a month or two afterwards, claiming that she didn't that the cars weren't there, and she talked about when did she come back to pick up the cars? Because she said that she had went by there once before, and the cars were moved, and then she came back another time, and they were still sitting where they were sitting. You know, they did a lot of tap dancing around this thing, trying to cover what they had done.
Okay, so she did use the term cars with an S and not car.
Right.
Okay, so at some point that says to me.
That's a very astute observation. I like that. Yeah, that's exactly. She did
right.
specify cars.
Okay, so that says to me, though, then at some point the officer is acknowledging that day she did, you know, witness two cars, you know, being taken. So why then did her documentation on the police report not properly indicate all the information concerning VIN numbers and tag numbers and, you know, that type of thing on the report is the big question.
One thing I would say, and I'm just speculating on this, is that maybe they did not want to put it official on one of the cars because someone obviously wanted the car. When those antiques, they can take an antique car, they can fix up an antique, they can make about anywhere $6,000 to $10,000 on those cars, depending on how good they have to fix them up.
Mm-hmm.
There are several reasons for doing such, but at the end of the day, it was quite a haul because I think between them and the record companies, they have a nice little side. They got a nice little side hustle. They working on taking these cars. Because, I mean, there are a lot of people on our streets in the neighborhood. They have a lot of old cars. Some of these cars be sitting on the properties, on the streets or whatever. They take these cars, and the Auto Pound don't want to keep a lot of these cars. Cause, you know, I mean, I've spoken to some of the other people that work with the police department, and they've said that, yeah, sometimes these cars sit down at least 3-4 years. So it never made sense how they got my cars and sold them, you know, the following month when you have cars been down there, you know, a whole lot longer than that. And it's not like I had Corvette. It's not like I was driving a Corvette or a Bentley or something. I mean, we're talking about two pretty much run-of-the-mill regular cars you can see almost every day.
Okay, let me ask
so,
you this.
It definitely showed me that this was very personal. It just that to what level of that one thing they wanted to ensure, as what was said in the video, is that they wanted to make sure that I wasn't going to be riding around anywhere. I was going to have to be catching a bus. And that has definitely been one of the biggest agitating emotions I've had to deal with. Because I've never been to the point I was stuck having to catch a bus everywhere I go now, like I am now.
I've always
prided myself on having me at least two cars, you know. One time I even had four at one time. Here I am just brought down to zero
as far as transportation.
It's not a good look, especially when you're trying to run.
I don't think Mr. Ruffin can hear me, so I'm going to pause him for a second so he can let me jump in for a second here. Mr. Ruffin, please let me jump in for a second, please. I'm trying to get your attention to ask you, did someone at the city at some point tell you to get over it or, you know, it's something in essence to they were just some old cars, so what's the big deal type of thing?
I caught a lot of jaw like that. You know, and, you know, the one person that was really good at rubbing it in on me was Ochoa, you know, he just made the point. He even kind of laughed about it, like, you know, we finally got you. And, he was going back and forth with me about, you know, how many times you had to move the cars, how many times this happened, that happened. I was going like, well, it shouldn't have never happened at all. Because, you know, then he was saying, you know, he tried to say something about the insurance, and I said the same thing to him. If I was driving the cars with no insurance and you pulled me over, yes, I get that. That's the law. But, I mean, there have been a lot of times I've gotten pulled over and they never bothered me about insurance because they know how bad it is. Hell, I mean, heck, I'm riding around here with no license. You know, the only thing I got is my ID card, and I'm trying to get that worked out as far as the driver's license and everything because,
okay.
So at some point
they make you an offer for the cars, like something, some ridiculously lowball offer? Did that ever take place?
Yes, it did. The city attorney, Justin Roy, he made an offer for $300 for each car.
$300 for each car.
And I'm going like, you know, the sound system is worth more than $300. You know, the tools in the other car is worth more than $300. So I was very humiliated by that. And I pulled up the value of those cars. And like I said, I mean, the to buy another 88 Mercury Cougar, it's gonna be some serious amount of money. Because the hard part about finding one like that is one that's structurally not damaged and is running and running relatively well. Because usually when you buy a car like that, you're gonna have to either eventually rebuild the motor or the transmission in less than a year or two. Because most of these used cars are gonna be worn out.
Okay, so was his $300 offer per car in response to the lawsuit, or was this before you filed the lawsuit?
No, this was in response to the lawsuit. I had already filed a lawsuit at that time.
Really? And so,
yes.
So literally they're saying, we'll give you $600 to go away. And you said to them what?
Let's just say I can't repeat what I said on the radio.
Okay. Wow. Wow. And that was the city of... Now, what title was this person at the city?
This is the city attorney for the city of Dallas. Mm-hmm. He works with Broadnax, the city manager.
Okay, gotcha. So when they took those cars, did that create a financial hardship for you?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can't get anywhere without a car.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just to go to Blewett Flowers, what would normally take a 7-8 minute drive is now going to take about almost an hour, because you have to go almost a mile from the house. And you got to catch another bus. You got to wait till that bus finally comes back around and come pick you up, and then you got to do this thing all over again. Then at one point in time, when they had when they changed the route, wasn't even a bus going by past Blewett Flowers. They had to finally called Dart to get that redone. And
so,
then, you know, the other thing, go ahead.
So in terms of your personal belongings that were in the car, did they even allow you to retrieve those?
No. I lost a lot of personal items. You know, like I said, my dad had a lot of tools that was in those cars. Some other little mementos and things that he had. You know, my father passed away in 2010. I gave him the car. He was driving it while he was suffering from cancer.
Oh.
And so he used the car the last few years, up until he died. Then I went back and got the car.
Oh.
And then, you know, I had spent about $1,000 trying to get it back fixed where it can drive on the highway again, because car had, you know, taken a lot of punishment. You know, he had the car for like about 3 years. That's why the car was in Mississippi. And that's why, yeah, the car was in his name at that time, but I was the original owner. So I had to, so when I got the antique plates, I left it in his name kind of like as a, you know, in his honor or something. I left it in his name, but I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out if they pull over the car and they see Ruffin on there, and I'm the driver, then they know it's my car.
So the car has somewhat of a sentimental value, or had somewhat of a sentimental value to you as well.
An extreme sentimental value to me. Like I said, I bought that car in 2002, and like I said, I've driven that car to Mississippi, drove to Alabama before. I've been to New Orleans several times. That car was rock solid. That's the reason why I didn't even paint the car, because I liked the fact that the car looked like it was something that was just all hulled out, but it was reliable and it was solid and it did what it was supposed to do. It's like an ugly woman that you love. You love her because she's reliable. You don't care about how good she looks. I guess that's the best point I can put on it. I love her because that's my woman. And I love that car. It was my car.
So you lost a car that had sentimental value, and you also had tools and valuables in the car as well.
Exactly.
Wow. So were you surprised that the car sold so quickly?
The only thing I'm surprised about as far as that part is the fact that it was the way it was done. They were in such a hurry, not just to possess the cars, to get them from me, but then they wouldn't even give somebody time to even try to, buy them back. They already had them processed to get them sold and everything. You know, I've talked to the president of the Black Police Officer Association, Terrence Hopkins. You know, he told me before that, they've had problems like this before. And that if a car had gotten impounded or something like that under bad conditions, that they'll bring the car back, get a guy like a gift certificate or something worth some money or something like that, and then they sign an agreement that they don't sue. It could have been handled that way. He said, you're not the first or the last person this has happened to. Because he was trying to take away the factor that this was something that was done to me personally. And, the fact that they did not try to meet me halfway on giving me the cars back, it's not like the city of Dallas going to go bankrupt behind these cars. It's not like they solved their city budget behind selling the cars. It's not like the world is a better place because Reggie Ruffin is walking. But this was just a clear sign of showing just how far they can use taxpayer dollars to punish somebody because they don't like them. That's the sad illustration that I'm looking at.
So you believe if this had happened on another side of town, let's just say a more affluent part of town, that the outcome would not have been the same?
Oh, absolutely. A lot of people who I had talked to, they couldn't believe the length that they went through to do all of this, because they was like, it didn't make no sense that they do something on this level the way that they did. Just like you remember what had happened when Alan West's wife got stopped and the police officer lied on the report, said the woman was drunk, they impounded the car, and they arrested her and charged with the DWI. A few days later, they found out that the woman was not drunk. So what did they do? They refunded their money. They gave them the cars back, and they gave them some restitution for the inconvenience. So it's not a rare occurrence, and it shouldn't have required me filing all the stuff I had to file. But it just turned into a pissing match. It just turned into a contest that someone had to get the last one in. And here we are 3 years later. The case went to court. I had gotten an attorney. The case won in my favor. I won the summary of motion judgment and the discovery, and it was proven. The judge that presided over the case initially was David Evans, and then Roy Willis was the Ray Willis was the judge that decided that there was sufficient evidence for this thing to go, not only just go to trial, but also to go to mediation. So the case was already decided to go to mediation. Then COVID hit. The courts got sidetracked. But my case, it kept moving on. So what I also had to do, they kept claiming qualified immunity and saying that the city couldn't be sued, this, that, and the third. So what I did was I filed a small claims case against Officer Copeland, separate from the case that I filed against the city.
Mm-hmm.
So when it went to small claims, the case got passed through. They ratified it. They said also that it had to go to mediation. So I had both cases that was ready to go to mediation, the small claims for the cars and then the one for the city for the harassment and the official oppression.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a date for July 29th of 2021, and lo and behold, the day before, after the courts and everything had closed, the city, the city attorney sent an email to my email address and also one to the city attorney, claiming that three unscrupulous judges jumped into this case at the very last minute. Three appellate judges from the fifth Court of Appeals for the district court here in Dallas. Their names was Robbie Partita Kipnis, Bonnie Goldstein, William Peterson. They filed a motion to have the whole entire case thrown out, claiming that they had claiming the qualified immunity, and then claimed jurisdiction, that the district court didn't have the jurisdiction to preside in the case, despite the fact they had been arguing and going over the case for the previous 2 years. Now all of a sudden you want to say you don't have that, and which seems funny because, well, you've been following Joel Fitzgerald case. Joel Fitzgerald sued the city over his wrongful termination with the city with the city of Fort Worth and the Fort Worth Police Department in the same court.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I'm not the smartest mofo in the world, but last I checked, I mean, sounded to me like state district court is the proper jurisdiction. So they, you know, they filed an improper ruling, which of course I had, I had filed appeal on that, and now that's where we're stuck. We're hung up on the appeal, and of course I'm also filing a motion against the judges. I filed a judicial misconduct charge against the judges because this is a clear case of judicial tampering, because the case was already decided of what was going to happen. Now, if they wanted to file an appeal afterwards, they could have done that, but we hadn't even heard my part of the case. You know, my side of the argument had not been satisfied at that juncture.
Let's talk about how they, first of all, let's talk about how you feel that this is an auto theft ring. Who are you saying is involved, and what proof do you have that that is occurring?
Well, not just based upon what my case was, but I mean, just like I was speaking about the case with Colonel West, is the fact that police are always involved in some type of little ish going on with the citizen and everything. They get the record company to come out here and they get these cars, and they're like, when they, and then of course they take them down to the impound yard. The impound yard got basically facilitate the sales, and then you have people from all sides, all walks of life, whether car dealers and everybody like that. They come down there and they know when they get these cars from the city at the auto pound, you're practically getting a good deal for practically pennies on the dollar. You can get an old car like if let's say they sold my car for like $300-$400, and then they could turn around, fix the car. The car has got a good motor. The car has got a good transmission. They can fix that car up. They can sell that thing at an antique dealership for almost anywhere from $6,000 to $10,000. So that's a whopping profit on there. And then of course, since the police officer is the one that got the cars, a lot of times people do not fight like I had to fight for these cases. If you get that car lock, stock, and barrel, getting a title is no problem. They can always get a title typed up through the city, and that's no longer your car. So yes, it's a very profitable venture, and this happens in a lot of cities quite often. You just don't hear about it because not too many, not often do they get caught like this. But you know, the everyone's getting a kickback on this thing when that profit goes in. You know, that money, when that money's flowing, everybody's going. So it's always been a situation that, you know, under the right guise of lobby, but we've talked a lot about how the South Central Division and the Southwest Division seems to be the two most corrupt police departments in Dallas. They seem to have a lot of problems going on in the news. I mean, you remember the Brian Reiser case where he was accused of murdering someone. Then then the case got dropped. Then, of course, I think they ended up having to drop the charges on him. And I mean, there's been other thefts that's been involved that's concerned other cops. You know, I mean, I don't name, because then they'll start saying that I'm defaming them and everything. So I'm being careful about that. But things that, I mean, you can pull them up in the paper. You Google. I Google a lot of this stuff. And you'd be surprised what you find. You know.
Well, let me ask this. So the police report, if I remember in your pre-interview, you said the police report did not even state what towing company took the car.
No, right. It didn't.
Okay.
See, that's another problem. And when I went down there to ask them that question, they didn't want to tell me.
Okay, so they never told you who told
them. No, they never told me who told the cars.
So you would think if your car got towed. You would think if your car got towed. Okay. You would think if the car got towed, you would owe the towing company a fee. You never was billed for the fee for towing the car.
The city of Dallas is who I would have been having to pay. Not the towing company. The towing company he's just a facilitator. He's bringing the car down there. The towing company's getting paid by the city.
So the city never billed you for the towing?
The city will bill me when I come down there to pay for it, yes.
Okay. So if they sell your car, then you don't owe them anything.
Right. I owe them nothing.
Okay.
No.
So
that's how they make money back, by selling the cars.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But you would think if your car was illegally parked, then you would owe somebody for the towing fee.
Well, to cut to the chase, because I see where you're going to cut to the quick of that, what would happen in that situation, they would have to file a writ to the judge. A court order would have to be filed for them to take the car. If there is a bunch of like if I'm parked there and the car's been sitting there a long period of time, they have to file a complaint first with the city or with a judge. They have to file with a magistrate before they can just go out there and effectively take the car. It's several steps that have to go into that. Now, to avoid having to wait for a judge's decision, it would have to be a situation where the car is blocking traffic. If the car is like damaged and it's totally inoperable, it can't be moved at all, it's been sitting there a long period of time, then they can just go down there and arbitrarily take the car. But for what they was trying to do in my situation, they would have had to wait and get a court order. Because if I'm just moving the car back and forth, hither and there, to and fro, then they could have an argument about it. But the other problem is the car was operable. That's why I sent the video to show that it cranked and ran. which seemed like that just said, oh, if it cranks and runs, then hell, we'll just steal it then.
Mm.
That's exactly what happened. So that's, you know, so, I mean, it was like you're in a situation, you know, lose-lose. As the old saying goes, you can't fight City Hall. And one thing about Eric Johnson, he's definitely proven that point, because when I went down there and first talked about this thing, this was just right after he got elected. So I'm up there, going up there to see Miss Arnold, and then here he is screaming and prancing around the hallways, taking selfies around every corner of the of City Hall, like this is his new house that he done moved into. So I told him about what had happened. He said, well, I'll take a look at it and see what's going on. And, you know, he gave me the old sorry this happened and everything, but he said that, you know, I'll get on it as soon as I can. And, of course, that was 3 years ago. And here we are now, about time for me to be elected. And so now this is where I'm going to get mine in, and I'm going to make sure that the world knows about just how two-faced that he is. Just, well, Carolyn King Arnold got so many faces, you know, it's like I don't think I have to sell too much. I don't sell that much to anybody about how triplicit she is, because she's only good when the camera's on.
So you're talking about Mayor Eric Johnson and Councilwoman Carolyn King Arnold.
Indubitably, yes.
So let me go back to where we were with who is involved in this. So you believe the auto ring is comprised of the towing companies, the street construction crew, the police at the South Central Division, and the Dallas Auto Pound?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's a nice look. When they started this project, they did the project because when you're starting to do construction on the road, the best way to find out these cars move is wake somebody up at 6 in the morning and tell them they got to move the cars because they're doing construction. Then they get to see whose cars work, whose cars is registered, whose cars is this, whose cars is that. And let's see, the thing that kind of was discerning about the Suzuki was the fact the Suzuki has never had a ticket written on it about anything. Then all of a sudden, they just grab it and take it and never cited for anything, never put a ticket over anything, never put a sticker on it for anything. The only reason why they took it was because it was parked right in front of the Cougar, and it had my name on it.
So, okay, the officer was Officer Kashunda Copeland. She's the NPO out there in your area. Is that not correct?
That is correct.
Okay. So NPO.
Oh, I'm glad you brought that back up. We're going to talk about it in a moment. But what was your question?
Okay. So did you know her personally, or was there some vendetta going on between the two of you, or do you believe someone got her to come after you? What do you think is really going on?
I don't know her. I mean, if I had known her, I would like to think we could have worked something out better than what had happened. Because, see, the first lie was she didn't know nothing about me or didn't know nothing about the cars or nothing. So then I did a background check on her, found out she lived on Humphrey Avenue, which is right by, not even a mile from our house. And, you know, I know about her husband, Fred Copeland. I know all this and that. They got a nice looking, they got a nice Range Rover, got a Jag. I mean, you know, they doing real good. And they, like I said, they live in the neighborhood. You know, they own properties, other properties and that. So that just give you an idea that how easy it is to find out anything about anybody. All you got to do is just Google it. And, you know, and like for her to tell that lie that she didn't know anything about it, let me further know there's something more to this than what had happened. And, yeah, this has gone beyond personal because, you know, with her being an NPO, the NPO should not be up here instigating fights between neighbors, got neighbors involved in fingering somebody out, and then you covering for them. They shouldn't be involved in this, you know, just – since you have a disdain for what someone else is driving, it should not be your place to say, well, I don't like that car. It's an ugly car. You just need to get him a new car. So I'm going to take this car from him. You know, I mean, and like I said, I'm just scratching right now at the surface. Whatever her motivation was for going out of her way to take my cars, take my livelihood, take my mementos from me, you know, that just goes to show the apathy that we have from our city officials today. It's like whatever they don't like, they're gonna get rid of it. You know, if they don't like what your dog is, they'll shoot your dog. You know.
So you believe the neighbor next door is the one who instigated the cars being removed?
I think he instigated a big part of it. I don't think he was the whole story, but he's part of the story. Because they never went after him for him threatening my dad. This man was on parole. I mean, for a man to be on parole and to stir up as much trouble as he stirred up, that whole entire month of May, leading up to what, you know, to what eventually happened with my car getting stolen. And then on the video, you can hear him talking about the raggedy car, you need to get new tags, you need to be walking. He said all these things on the video, and I sent this all to Carolyn Arnold. And it's like, once again, it's like they could have got him for criminal menacing, for disorderly conduct, threatening senior citizens. You know, it could have been a whole bunch of things they could have got him for. But at the end of the day, even if they arrested him for it or not, they could have made him stop harassing. It wasn't until like 6 months later that when I was going back and forth doing the investigation with the city and going to internal affairs, the commander down there, Paul Younger sent two cops to the house like January, February after the incident to say, well, you guys need to learn to get along. Y'all need to do this and do that. I'm like, you know, like boo, like that's so late. So I solved that problem, though. That's when I went and bought me a gun. And that's when they legalized guns, you can carry them without a permit. I got me a holster, now I carry me some heat. So if he threatens, screams, if he do anything to me, my mother, or my dad, because, I mean, he even got in my mom's face one time. I wanted to kill him that day when he got in my mom's face, pointing at her face and everything. Now, I mean, you're not going to keep disrespecting a black man and his family. And you're definitely not going to do that by getting my mom. My sister wanted to drive from Jackson and kill him herself.
Let's switch. Let's not say all of that. Let me ask another question. Let's go in a different direction. I spoke with IED. Who did I speak with? I spoke with James Etchinson over in IED. Now, y'all, the procedure in IED in Dallas is obviously different than most places because I asked him about Reggie's cars and his whole investigation. And he told me something that really shocked me. He says, I didn't do the investigation. And I said, okay, well, who in IED did the investigation? He was very honest. And he says, well, he said it came over as, and I'm looking for my notes, y'all, because this was very interesting. I thought when a complaint goes to IED that IED is supposed to investigate the complaint. But according to him, it was not investigated in IED, that in fact the investigation was a DR. And he said that it was DR 2019-177, and it was done by Sergeant Moses Ochoa. And I said, well, who is Sergeant Moses Ochoa? And he said Sergeant Moses Ochoa was at the precinct where Kashonda Copeland worked. And so I said, so literally the investigative authority was in the same building as the officer rather than IED, which you know, may sometimes be somewhat separate. It's a possibility they may not know each other unless someone rose up through the ranks and was transferred to IED. However, if you're saying that, you know, someone within my own precinct may be investigating me, that sounds like
right.
That doesn't, you know, that's not going to go well because
definitely.
I don't think that, let me finish. I don't think that it's like asking your brother to investigate you or asking your sister to investigate you. And so that's what I found very strange about this investigation, that IED actually told me that it was a division referral and that the investigation had been done by Moses Ochoa. So when I tried to reach Moses Ochoa, I was told that Moses Ochoa had retired. Y'all see where this is
yeah.
going?
Well, I mean, that's what has happened with Dallas now. Whenever there's a problem, it's always investigated in-house. Yeah, it'd be like if my grandson stole an apple from the grocery store, I'll just go down there and say, well, do you have anything to show that my grandson stole it? Okay, my grandson, okay, if you don't prove my grandson did it, I asked my grandson, he said he didn't steal it. Okay, bam, he didn't steal it. And then that's the end of it.
That's what it felt like. And so when I asked the person at the South Central Precinct, who they referred me to Sergeant Cranford. And I said, so Sergeant Cranford, you know, can you answer this question or that question? And she says, no. She said, I wasn't the officer who impounded the cars or had the cars impounded. And she said, so I cannot speak for her mindset at the time in which she did it. And so she said, technically, this is officially above my pay grade, so I'm going to refer this to the major. She never said who the major was, but that's exactly what she told me. And that was it. So she told me that Sergeant Ochoa had retired. So I guess people who retire can't speak. So that means it's going to the major, and I never heard back from them. And I will
right.
go on the record. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just agreeing with you. That is how most of these investigations are going to be handled and done. And I mean, and you got to think about this. Anytime they will go out of their way to cover for each other when they kill somebody, hell, a couple of cars, what's that? You know. It's like that's like a little hangnail or something as far as they're concerned. You know, I mean, but see, I'm the mofo for complaining about it, and I'm the one that's you know, I'm the low down dirty dog. Just like they was talking about the fact that the police oversight committee, they wasn't going to investigate it. They said why? Because you filed a lawsuit. So I'm being punished for filing a lawsuit because I couldn't get justice done the old-fashioned way by them investigating it, rooting it out, because they know anytime someone files a false report, filing a false report by itself is an offense fireable by, I mean, it's a fireable offense. You get brought up on criminal charges, fired, and you have to make restitution with the person who you stole from, because that's theft at that point. That's theft under the color of authority. And that's the, like, you know, that's one of the number one edicts for the Justice Department, that you cannot have dishonest officers filing false reports. That's just totally, that's never been tolerated.
One of the things I saw on their response was in the city of Dallas, basically, they were saying that, you know, that you're supposed to move the car every 24 or no longer than 20, you can't sit still for longer than 24 hours. And so they basically said that they were citing you that you had habitually left the two vehicles abandoned on the city roadway and the city was exercising its legitimate police power to tow them if they are left for more than 24 hours. So did you feel that was fair?
No, that was a load of crap because the cars. I'm gonna go one better than that. How would they even know that the cars were not being moved or anything like that? Because like I said, I work graveyard shift, so when I go to work, they're at home or whatever. And then when I get home from work, they're on the street and they see the car there. But here's a little notion. All you had to do was knock on the door and ask, why the car's parked there? What's going on that? Can't you move the cars? Can you, you know, that's also normal routine on that. They usually come and ask you what's wrong with the cars, and they give you a chance to move them. The last thing they ever do, I mean, and I'm speaking as someone who's been living in this neighborhood since 1998, who's never had a problem about things until 2019. Every time they've ever come by, we had to move. One time they were doing construction on the house across the street, and I parked my car over there on the curb to stop them from someone stealing the trailer, and I went down there to the southwest and told the watch commander. He said, okay, no problem. They put a notation on there, notify the cops, said, hey, not to touch the car over there. It's over there blocking the trailer. It's not complicated. It's not rocket science. So all of a sudden, because I'm speaking out against police corruption, because people out here are getting killed out here on the streets by these same police. They're going in people's backyards, stealing their tools, stealing their jacks and everything, or engine hoists and things like that. Now it's a problem. I mean, if it wasn't for I wouldn't be involved in this type of situation. This was forced upon me. Mm-hmm. I didn't actually become an activist. But guess what? When you think about the idea that I could still be in prison for what they tried to put me in there for deadly conduct and injury to a child, and you knew you was innocent, and then they didn't give a damn about any of that. They just wanted to grill you and run you through there like they've run thousands of other people, making you recycle slaves. Yeah, I got a problem with that. So I'm wrong for being black and having a problem for standing up for myself, because too many people around here won't do it. Some people don't know what to do and how to do it, but then you have the people that's down there, supposed to be our elected officials. They're just down there just making money. They're just political celebrities. They're not political advocates for their constituents. So,
right.
Yeah.
I think one thing I was seeing, too, on their response is they consider this sovereign immunity. I was like,
right.
Wow. Yeah. You know, that the police has sovereign immunity. So how did that grab you when you read that?
Well, I mean, at this point, I can't be surprised at anything they say. I also pointed out to them that them riding around, that them going around the neighborhood chalking tires and checking the car, see the car move or not, all this other stuff is a violation of the Fourth Amendment, improper search and seizure. That's the reason why you can't just be running up here grabbing people's cars. See, these are all the things that has been in my petition. So that's the reason why that's why they so stymied right now dealing with me, because every time I file something back on whatever it is that they're throwing, they can't just kick it to the curb or everything. So like this latest one with this judicial corruption, having these crooked judges throwing his case out without any type of without any type of probable cause or any type of motion for doing this thing. You just can't say, oh, we don't have no jurisdiction. Boom. I mean, they didn't have nothing else to say or do it. Then you're going to wait until the last day before mediation because they're trying to save Officer Copeland's job.
Hold on.
You know, so.
I saw something on here, and I'm looking for it. Basically, they were saying, and I'm looking for it on this complaint. They said something about, that you couldn't be parking on the street without compensating the city or something like that. And I'm looking for where I read that. It was very interesting, but basically was saying that you had no right to be parking on the street repeatedly without compensation to the city. Did you remember reading that part?
I don't remember that one, but it's interesting. It's interesting reading if they said that, because I'm going like, okay, so don't we pay enough taxes around here, living out here? I mean, don't we have enough problems living in Dallas? And now you're trying, but see, to that defense, you know, they do that to people like Let's say like if I'm riding up and down the street with a brand new Cadillac CTS, then they'll just pull you over for not for making a right turn without signal light. Just give you a ticket. There's all types of street tax city like to do. I remember the time my brother was driving a Mercedes Benz, and they pulled him over, said he was speeding, going 52 in a 35 mile zone. So yes, there are all types of ways the city likes to tax people for driving nice cars, living good. You get a nice yard and everything, and you have a pit bull there, and they want to charge you for having a pit bull there, make you want to get rid of your dog when you got a house and you got a fence and whatnot. The dog's not bothering anybody, but it's bothering them because you have it. These are the type of things that we definitely need to be concerned about, but we're not concerned about it until it affects us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I think we all need to take consideration. I mean, we're in a very acrimonious world right now. And everybody's worried about what someone else is doing. Everyone's worried about how is the other person living, what they're driving, who what woman they got, how many cars they got, and I'm like this. I believe in living and let live. I mean, if this person happy riding around with a raggedy car, if this guy wants to ride a bike, whatever this guy wants to do, fine. I mean, as long as he ain't bothering me, I don't have a problem in the world. But like I told you earlier, anyone who bothers me or bothers my family, that's going to be a problem, and I don't have a problem taking care of it. But with that being said, on this note, I'm just standing up, and I'm just going to let Mayor Johnson know, just because I don't make the money you make, I don't live where you live, I don't eat what you eat and everything like that, you're still not going to come and treat me like I'm lesser than you. I mean, I don't think I'm better than anybody, but I sure as hell don't feel like I'm less than anybody. Mm-hmm. And I will, I will fight anybody tooth and nail they think they can walk over me. And that's what this whole thing's been about for me, is respect. When Ms. Arnold was running for city council, when I was telling her about some of the problems I was having at that time, she was talking about how she has men that are sons, she has sons that are men, and she has cares and concerns about them. But then when she got downtown and got elected, all of a sudden, she don't know nothing about that no more. We are her primary, we're part of her bailiwick. Her bailiwick is to defend the rights for the people in District 4. Mm-hmm. And I speak for more than just myself, that all she knows how to do is spoon and coo in front of that camera and try to act like she's doing something, show everybody what type of nice little hot outfit she's wearing, how nice she got her hair done and everything like that. So someone's really, enjoying the benefits of now she's been promoted to Deputy Mayor Pro Tem. Whoop-de-whoop. But when you going to start doing something for your citizens over in this district that you're using for a doormat, just like your predecessor who gaffled so much that, he just now getting out of prison for him enjoying the fruits of him hitting up the city like it's a piggy bank.
I think it would be worth a full request to see how many times they impound cars like the way they impounded yours and sold it that quickly. Because it just seems like everything happened so fast. It seems like it wasn't proper documentation. And I don't know all the details, but I'm just from what I've researched, and y'all, listen, I did do due diligence. And for the record, for anybody to say, what does she know? Listen, for the record, I called the city secretary's office, Mayor Eric Johnson's office, Carolyn King Arnold's office, the Dallas Auto Pound, the city manager's office. Listen, I called everybody out. So I did not just pick up this story and run with Reggie's version of it. Well, let me finish, Reggie. I reached out and did due diligence to try to speak with anyone who would talk to me. I spoke with IED. I reached out to anyone who would speak to me about this particular story before I went live so that I would make certain that there wouldn't be anything that I didn't know. And I did talk to Tristan in the mayor's office, and Tristan referred me to IED, which I did call. And I spoke with James Etchison in IED, who then made me aware that IED did not do the investigation, that the investigation had been done by the South Central Precinct. And that's, again, when I talked to Sergeant Cranford, who told me answering any of my questions would be above her pay grade, and said she would speak with the major about it. And as of airtime, they did not get back with me. So every stone I attempted to turn over to make certain that I was getting the facts of this story correct. So if anybody thinks that I just ran with the story that Reggie gave me, no, that is not the case. So you were saying what, Reggie?
No, one other thing I was going to say. I spoke with Tanya McClarty. She's in charge of the Police Oversight Committee. Now, she said the reason why they didn't do an investigation because of the fact that I filed a lawsuit against the city, which precluded them from going any further with it. However, what I did do, I did file an open records request because I want to find out how many other people have been stonewalled the same way. How many other people have been stymied the same way. These are out-and-out blatant violations of civil rights. That's the thing we need to get back to. You know, when they started this oversight committee, just like when they supposedly started this this inspector general, they're supposed to be having Bart Beavers. He's supposed to be starting his office in October. Now, they hired him 6 months ago, and he still doesn't have an email address. Still barely have a phone number to reach. And they this is all these little pretenses that the mayor puts up to try to seem like he's trying to be outward. And then, of course, he got this other little fair and equity plan he's supposed to have for the southern sector that's supposed to include us finally as far as equality goes. These are all election day pretenses that are, you know, as soon as after he gets reelected or whatever, will go away just as fast as what he just said in the ink drive them. Mm-hmm. We need to keep holding them accountable, and we need to keep them on their toes to far as go. But what I'm looking for is I'm trying to find other people who have the same problem because, you know, I try to go have a press conference about it. The media doesn't want to run the story. They don't want to do it because, you know, like, for example, Ken Kaltoff, you know, when I tried to get them to do the story, he said he didn't want to do the story because the cars were raggedy and everything. And so my thing with him is that, okay, I guess since he's now in a position to where he's not having to be out there covering tornadoes and standing out in the middle of pouring rainstorms, he don't want to lose that cushy job down at the City Hall. You know, he got him a City Hall gig. You know, he just go there. So I'd be riding all over town trying to chase a story. Stories come to him. So there's always a caveat involved in anybody who once used to do things, used to be involved in helping people. Because I remember when he did a case where a white woman was arrested by the police, and they stripped her naked on the side of the road and strip searched her looking for drugs. Those cops, not only did they get fired, they also went to prison, got convicted because of his story. But you know, it seems like we seem to lose our way as far as what we do for our public. And that's, you know, I think that's the biggest blight we got to worry about.
Right. I think, you know, and y'all, let me be clear on why I decided to do the story. First of all, I found it to be a fascinating story because it had so many things that I thought could have went the other way, and this thing could have been like resolved like with a snap of a finger. So I couldn't understand like how did this go from, you know, someone's car's getting towed to, you know, getting sent to the impact to the auto pound and then sold in a month, even though he put the injunction in and the injunction coming one day late and them not stopping, you know, sale and just reversing everything and all the attempts that were, you know, made to contact city officials and nothing was done. And so it just made me wonder how many other people are in the same situation. And that's why I did the show, really in an attempt to see how many other people will contact me and say they were victims of this in some kind of way. And so I just really, I did it for really for informational purposes, just to see, is this going on a regular basis or was Reggie singled out? And Reggie, it speaks volumes to if you were singled out. I remember you said you were shot at recently. Were you shot at after the cars were impounded or shot at before the cars were impounded?
Well, this was in between the cars being impounded, me suing, and me still going down there pursuing getting the case sent to mediation so I could get the case settled. Matter of fact, this was like 6 weeks, almost 6 weeks before the final hearing. When I was going back and forth conferring with my attorney about this about the issue. So this was during the time it was really bad. And the sad part about it is the person that shot at me still has not been identified, despite the fact dark buses have cameras on there. The buses, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, I wasn't even at the bus stop 3 minutes, and someone's shooting at me in my back. Fortunately, the cross piece on the fence, the bullet got caught by that. Otherwise, that bullet would have struck me. And the other bullet hit the windshield, almost killed the driver.
So, do you believe that the person who took the shot at you, that situation is somehow connected to this lawsuit about the car?
I don't like to sound dramatic, but at the end of the day, he wasn't shooting at me because I owed him some money. That's for sure. I was the only person that was on the bus. That's another one that kind of makes you kind of quiver a little bit. But it's just the fact that it's the way, like I said, everything goes back to the way it happened. He waited for me to get there. He knew what time the bus was going to be there. Like I said, I just walked up to the stop. It wasn't even 5 minutes after one, and then the bus gets there about 9-10 minutes after one, and then next thing I know, as soon as I'm walking into the bus, I'm getting shot at. At first, I thought it was just random gunfire, but when the neighbor showed me that bullet hole and the trajectory of the bullet in the same direction of where I was standing, that's a lot more than a coincidence at that point.
So do you fear for your life?
Yeah, I'm very fearful of my life. That's just an extra wrinkle of what I have to deal with now. Now, not only am I having to walk, you know, or have to catch the bus to get somewhere, you know, that's the reason why I'm carrying a gun now. That's the reason why I wear Kevlar now, because somebody wants me dead. I mean, it's not even a euphemism anymore. This is an actual fact. And, I would just love to get to the point where I don't even have to live here anymore, and just I can move and get away and try to start over some other type of way, because I'm not going to be living the rest of my life looking over my back.
Well, did you file
a
police report with the Dallas Police Department?
I filed a police report. The DPD got there, and then they passed the case on to someone from ATF, some guy, Jake from ATF. I guess he worked for State Farm. I don't know, but when I hear Jake, that was all I thought about, and I haven't heard anything else about it since.
So you did file a report?
Yes.
Okay,
only called me back maybe twice, and that's it. And then when you think about Joshua Brown, how Joshua Brown testified against Amber Geiger, and then he got gunned down a week later. Yeah, it does give you something to think about. You know, like I said, it's not just me.
So ATF, as far as alcohol, tobacco, and firearms, is supposed to be handling your investigation, but you haven't heard anything from them?
No. Yes, they are, but no, I haven't. I only talked to Jake like maybe once or twice. I saw the car probably like about a few weeks afterwards at a Valero right there at Ledbetter and Bonneville. And I got the license plate number. I sent it in to him, and I haven't heard nothing back. But I did see the car again. It was a 2005 Sentra, the white Sentra. You know, had a little light damage on it and everything. And, it didn't have the best paint job in the world, and I kind of noticed how it looked because I got a good look at it when it drove past me. Because when I turned around and tried to take a shot, I aimed, but then I pulled back and said, no, you know, you might hit somebody. Because, you know, I mean, I can't shoot somebody when they're trying to get away like the police can. So it was no sense in me taking it to that next level. Because once you pull that gun out and once you pull that trigger, you can't take back what happens. So I had to still keep a coaching mind about that.
Mm-hmm. So since this is occurring with your cars being towed, have they consistently, you know, followed that same protocol with other cars that have been parked in the area? Do they make every car move every 24 hours that's in your neighborhood?
No.
Oh.
No, not at all. So, I mean, that just goes back to the point that, yeah, it was all about me. I mean, I had a neighbor who had had an old van that they made him move because his registration wasn't up to date on it and everything, but the van ran, but he just didn't want to be bothered with because he knew that, yeah, they got a little hard on about everybody now because of me, but... And he's been living here in the neighborhood a lot longer than I have, and then they start picking on him. So he just took his van down at Lancaster and just wouldn't park it there in front. The closer you are to the intersection, the more it makes you hot. And my our house being right at the intersection, yeah, we're definitely hot. But the further down the street you go, yeah, the less likely they're not going to just ride up and down the street to be checking everybody's cars out. That's called work.
A lot of people complain about flock cameras in Fort Worth. Are flock cameras on your street?
No.
Okay, so there's no
cameras
on your street.
They need to have them. So the way people be driving up and down the street with those loud, raggedy cars, and then they flying through the intersection going 60 miles an hour. It would be nice if they did put some flock cameras out there because that would definitely cut down on a lot of things. And like someone gets shot or something like that and they know which direction the car went, they can use the cameras to track the ID of the car. That would be a very good tool for surveillance in the area because you don't see cops going up and down our streets anymore like they were. They used to be parked around the corner at the corner stores and everything. Now they usually be down there at the 7-Eleven on right there at Ledbetter and Bonneville and Sunnyvale. But the police now, they're very, very nonchalant about the neighborhood now. A lot of them don't even live in the neighborhood anymore. They don't, they feel like after we've been protesting and speaking out against the police, now their idea is where we'll show them what it's like to not have police protection. So that's the other reason why, yeah, we're going to have to protect ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have a problem with that. You know.
So how do you think they'll make this right with you?
If they do, somebody would just wake up and have a conscience and start doing the right thing according to the oath that they took when they took office. or someone's going to have to make them take responsibility for it. But like I told them a couple of weeks ago, I'm not going to stop coming down here reminding them about what they've done, because I feel like not only do I speak for myself, I speak for a lot of people who can't speak for themselves. Who knows?
Well,
I might actually consider running for office.
Well, what are you asking them to do? I'm saying, what resolution would you like to see?
I would just like for them to start treating me like a human being and like a citizen of the United States of America. And when our civil servants are taking upon themselves to do the wrong, you know, they'll do wrong the same way they would treat me if I stole Ms. Copeland's cars and everything. I want them to treat her the same way they did me. Because, I mean, that's really, it's all about the golden rule. How would you feel if someone stole from you?
I guess I need to rephrase the question. What do you want as a resolution to this? I guess that's what I'm trying to say. How do you want the city to resolve taking your two cars?
I would like to be fiduciary compensated for what had happened. Mm-hmm. Like to have two new cars, and you know, I mean, they got thousands of cars down at the auto pile. I want what's taken from me replaced, but I still want a Mercury Cougar. I still want an 88 Cougar because that was mine. That was a part of me. And I had a car like that before then. You know, my sister had a Mercury had that old square box type of Mercury Cougar. Those cars are hard to find these days.
Mm-hmm.
And those are very good, reliable cars. And, you know, especially with that 302 motor in there. So, I mean, some people love what they love what they love. I mean, that's what they drive. And that's what that is. But
so I'm trying to find the lingo that I saw on the report, and y'all, I was rushing to read this at the last minute, and I saw something where they were stating that you cannot use the street as like private property. You can't just park your vehicles on the street. Do you not remember reading that where basically they were saying that you could not do that?
Well, if they can tell me that, they need to tell it to the other 20,000-30,000 other cars and other people. Mm-hmm. That do the same thing every day without fail. Because until they can start designating and delegating where people can park at, this is what's going to continuously happen. But once again, because of the fact this was a construction project going on at the time, I couldn't park where I wanted to park anyway. If you park in the backyard, they're going to cite you a ticket for parking on the grass. You park on the sidewalk in the grass here. They can cite you for that. They can impound your car. Where am I supposed to park my car? Am I just supposed to walk because they want me to walk because I ain't got no place to park the car? That ain't gonna happen either.
Hmm.
So, like I said, I mean, if you go down any of these streets over here where I live, you will see it's. I could see if I was the only person that had my car parked there. Them saying that, but some of these streets, you can barely drive your car down the street because both sides is boxed in. You got people now living 10, 12 deep in some of these houses. Everybody has a car.
Mm-hmm.
One house got 10 cars parked in front of the house.
Right.
And
I
it don't, yeah. So if you're going, I mean, can you really go out there and then that's another question. Can you really go out there and enforce the 24-hour rule? Put a ticket on someone's window and see what happens.
Shopee, no, we really don't want police. We don't want police to spend their, you know, their working hours, you know, put ticketing cars when there's murderers and rapists and sex trafficking and all this going on. So I really don't want my police officers, you know, spending that much time worrying about every car that's parked, because that sounds like an easy way not to deal with the bad guys. So I really wouldn't want police to put their focus there. I wouldn't.
Just, well, me neither. But guess what? That's the decision they chose to make when they obsessed themselves over my cars. What made them go after me so hard is the question that'll never be answered. We can suspect, we can allege, but at the end of the day, we'll never know. But to say that this was just some regular form of work that they was doing part of their duties, they'll never be able to sell me that load of garbage. Because, you know, I mean, what I did was nothing no more unusual than anyone else in that area. And, you know, they're not enforcing everything. Nothing's being done. And in part because it can't be done. It's impossible. I mean, police need to be out here, like you just said, police need to be out here keeping us safe, not running around here hunting parked cars.
Yeah.
That's just beyond asinine.
I think the problem that I have with this happened on the 4th of July, and y'all, there's so many people, you know, shooting guns on the 4th of July, and so many people who are shooting firecrackers illegally on the 4th of July. So I just found it hard to believe that the officer had, you know, the focus on those cars that were sitting that, you know, weren't doing anything. And I'm not, you know, defending Reggie, or I'm just being honest that, you know, there's all kind of activity going on the 4th of July. People are drinking, you know, people are driving drunk, people are, you know, fighting. Yeah, I mean, they are loaded on the 4th of July. People are, you know, doing the fireworks thing and, you know, shooting off guns. And so I just can't imagine in that particular area that there wasn't a lot of things going on that the officer could have addressed rather than focusing on, you know, towing two cars. That's just my thought. Yeah. And then listen, I'm not trying to take a side, but I'm just saying, I just know, you know, where I live at on the 4th of July, there's a whole bunch of noise and they ain't coming from parked cars. And so I would think that I would want the officer focusing on those people that were, you know, shooting off, you know, shot off shotguns or, you know, shooting firecrackers, you know, where they may set somebody's roof on fire or that type of thing, rather than focusing on taking somebody's cars, you know, whether a complaint was made by a neighbor or not.
A child got killed on the street. A child got killed on the street not long ago.
Really?
In that same area. Yeah. You know,
wow.
And then, you know, then you have other kids be riding little mini bikes and little doom buggies up and down the street. That I think would be something I'd be more concerned about than parked cars.
Right. Listen, y'all, I'm gonna close out tonight. This is what I think. Not that anybody asked me, but I'm gonna say how I think this ought to be resolved. Listen, City of Dallas, y'all got enough money to give this man compensation for those two cars and close this out. This is not worth the bad press. This is not worth, you know, the headache. This is not worth even talking about it again. If I were in leadership in the City of Dallas, it would be my vote. If I were a council person or the mayor or anyone who had any decision making over this particular process of city attorney, that what happened, you know, it probably could have been resolved a lot better for just the part of a customer service aspect of a police officer's job, that maybe she could have knocked on the door and inquired before she towed the vehicle, and none of this would have happened. So I'm going to say to the City of Dallas that I'm going to pray that you guys do the right thing and give this man some form of compensation for his vehicles and make it right, because
yes,
no one should be from here.
And if there are others that this has happened to, I would like to know more, because I don't want it just to be about me, because I know there are other people this has happened to. Because I know a young man who had that same problem in the same area. Same thing happened to him. You know, he moved the car. You know, they said he couldn't park over here. Then when he moved them like a house or two down, then they said the cars were abandoned and they seized the cars. But he didn't want to fight them because, you know, he's on parole. He's afraid they might find something to revoke his parole for and everything. They love to live by the fear factor and scaring people into bowing down. But that's just not who I am.
All right, y'all. That's the story of Reggie Ruffin. And Mr. Ruffin alleges that the Dallas PD has a auto theft ring, and he has been a victim. So, y'all, that's the story. We wanted to hear it, and we also brought it to you tonight. So, listen, y'all, this is what we do. Each and every Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m., tell a friend, tell a neighbor, tell a coworker to check out the show. We drop bombs every single Friday. Listen, if you have a product, a service, a nonprofit, a campaign, and you would like to get the word out, bring it over here. Consider advertising right here on Let's Talk Fort Worth. Send me at email at letstalkfortworth@aol.com. That's letstalkfortworth@aol.com. And I would love to talk to you about working with your budget to get you over here in advertising with us. Also, if you'd like to donate to the show, if you like what we do, send me an email to the exact same email address, letstalkfortworth@aol.com. We love bringing you great content every single week, and your donations will be appreciated to allow us to do even more great shows and hopefully get out into the community even more. Okay, y'all, listen, also follow us on Facebook. We have a Facebook page, Let's Talk Fort Worth, and it's on Facebook, and I would love for you to follow the post. We update every single day. Also, if you have an idea for a show, something that is in line with what we do here, we typically only cover Fort Worth, y'all, but the only reason we cover Reggie Ruffin's show is Reggie Ruffin's story is because he has been on the panel many times here on Let's Talk Fort Worth, and I didn't know his story until recently. And so when I heard about the story and all the details of it, I said, you know what? Let's talk about it on Let's Talk Fort Worth, even though we are basically a show that focuses mostly almost 100% on Fort Worth. But if you have a show idea, one that is in line with what we do here, that's something that's pretty much connected to the city of Fort Worth in any way, whether that be something downtown or your personal story, I would love to hear it. Again, drop me a line at letstalkfortworth@aol.com. Listen, y'all, until next week, good night.